This is Glenn Howerton. You are listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, my good friend.
That's me.
Do you really? Am I really your friend?
No.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
The less fortunate, my grandma used to call them. Those folks whose grimy, impecunious fingers clung to rungs beneath ours on the economic ladder. Which is to say, homeless people and cockroaches. Because when I was growing up in Northeast Philly, even the economic ladder we clung to was metaphorical. We couldn't afford a real one. Still, for as bad as things were back then, grandma never let us lose sight of the fact that the less fortunate were out there, hungry and tired and available for her to look down upon. Ah, bless her heart. She could always find the silver lining, right up until the day she got hit by that bus on her way to Horn and Hardart for the $1.29 early bird special. Grandma never really was the same again after that. She stopped doing all those little grandmotherly things. And eventually, she stopped breathing. Now, I'm well aware that during the adorable little economic shitshow that was the pandemic, the ranks of the less fortunate swelled to enormous proportions. Luckily, this hasn't drastically affected my line of work. After all, when times are tough, do people stop drinking? No. If anything, they drink more. But they do start drinking cheaper. Some turning to concoctions that, well, cost-efficient, really have no business being put into the human body. One particularly insolvent sunny afternoon last summer, even I, someone who drinks for a living and most definitely knows better, resorted to something called a white trash Russian. Now, if you've yet to have the pleasure, this is a toxic combination of Bowman's Virginia vodka and Yoo-Hoo that I'm almost certain did irreparable damage to my stomach lining and quite possibly my central nervous system. Seriously, I walked with a limp and talked with a southern accent for several weeks before I was right again. And again, it did the job. I got so buzzed up that for an entire 6 hours, I forgot how broke my ass was. But it got me to thinking, is there such a thing as a good poor people's cocktail? Surely not every cheap drink out there tastes like Sterno and makes you piss blood, right? When I see people in tank tops drinking out of styrofoam cups from munching on pigs in a blanket and cheese puffs at the local Muni Park on Saturday afternoon, they look so goddamn happy. What's in those cups? I knew of a few varieties. The poor man's margarita. It's tequila and squirt. It's very popular out here in the West. And in some eastern cities, large parties of paupers used to get by on something called Purple Passion. It's Welch's grape juice and grain alcohol. Then I heard that Blue Lagoons, whatever that blue sports drink crap is, plus grain alcohol, was becoming the budget beverage of choice in some circles. I know some people in Denver that mix up a delightfully named concoction called Pee in a Cup. It's Mountain Dew and vodka, or Everclear, served warm for similitude, of course. Now, some of the curb sitters in my old neighborhood in Philly used to specialize in what was called the Colt Python by adding a few shots of whatever cheap whiskey was on sale at the state store to a half quart of Colt 45 malt liquor. Works every time.
Colt 45. Every time.
Then naturally there's the mecca for white trash everywhere, the Jersey Shore. Oh, we used to go down there all the time. You go to parties down the shore that serve Skippies. These are made by stirring up a bottle of rock gut vodka, case of Natty Light, and lemonade mix in a trash can or a beer tub with ice. You add your fake tan and stupidity, you got yourself a party! Sound strategies all. But I wanted even more options, so I put out a query to my network of alcohol operatives, My old pal Terry Sullivan, who way back in the day used to write a column at GQ called Mixology, he said that there's cash-strapped drunks in Chicago who swear by something called Muddy Bottoms, which is a potent combination of Green River gourmet soda and real cheap bourbon. Old friend Ashley in Utah told me she loves her some Trailer Park Sangria. You buy the cheapest box of red wine available, usually at a place that takes food stamps, and you drink some of that wine to make room in the box, and then you add a little bit of grape juice to it. Smooth. One of my old editors at Playboy said his favorite cheap drink is the Pabst Smear. Shot of Smirnoff dropped into a glass of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Now bear in mind, you can't drop in your own shot. Someone else needs to administer it to you. You stay classy, even when you're drinking cheap. Yet another Ashley, this one from Culver City out here in California, is of the opinion, and who am I to say she's wrong, that a pint of pop-off vodka and a Slurpee gets the job done. Pop-off vodka, let me say this right now, is the height of cheap vodka. I actually made a video about pop-off vodka that I'll tell you about in a little bit. And then finally, there's another broke-ass drink of choice. You take grape-flavored Boons. That's it. Just grape-flavored Boons. Maybe mix it up with some Molly for some Technicolor vomit.
Oh, behave.
Okay. So as I said, I gathered some intelligence and I did my own reconnaissance mission. I hit the closest liquor store by my house, Davy Jones Liquor Locker in I guess is it Venice? It's Venice or Santa Monica. It's right on the border. It isn't so much a final resting place for dead seamen as it is the killing fields for homeless people's livers. So I went in there and I got myself, I was asked what the cheapest stuff is, and it was a tie between pop-off vodka, way to call it, Ashley, and an abomination called Kessler American Blended Whiskey, which bills itself as smooth as silk. I'd venture it's more of a silk burlap blend. Now, in the interest of science, and because they were only $5 a bottle, I bought them both. And after some brief experiments with the Kessler, I lost all interest in science and instead became fascinated by something written on the side of the bottle of pop-off. It said, "Now," all in caps, exclamation point, "unbreakable bottle." Seems like a handy trait in a product that makes people lose the coordination required to carry things. Plus, I like the sense of urgency generated by the caps and the exclamation point. It's as if they're daring you not to start drinking as soon as you hit the parking lot. Now, in my lubricated state, however, I saw this less as a service to the consumer than as a prideful boast, which is how I ended up dropping a bottle of pop-off off my fourth-story balcony. And why the cops now know where I live. Okay, so I made this video, and which I dropped this bottle of pop-off vodka off this video. You can check it out on YouTube. Just do Google Dan Dunn pop-off vodka, and I'm sure you'll find it. Now, amazingly, however, while the pop-off did lose structural integrity in the fall, let's just say it'll break you before you break it. And so impoverished booze hounds, remember, there's always hope. It's just that hope is trying to get out from under a bad mortgage, so it's going by an assumed name these days. The clever alias? Pop-off vodka. Sure, it may not be as invincible as that fancy happy juice I once heard about a case of Kettle One that survived an airplane crash, but at least you can rest easy knowing that even if you do manage to break a plastic bottle of pop-off, you can still drink out of it without fear of slicing up your small intestines with shards of glass. How's that for a silver lining, Grandma? So call me less fortunate, if you will. Oh, call me anything you'd like. I won't be listening, because I'm pretty sure the pop-off made me go deaf. Friends, you're listening to this show, which means you probably enjoy adult beverages, which in turn means you probably heard of a boozy little annual holiday called Cinco de Mayo. But do you know what the term Cinco de Mayo means? Of course not. I mean, who would know something as obscure as that? Well, I did a little research, and it turns out Cinco de Mayo is Spanish for the 5th of May. Go figure. Anyway, we think it's silly to limit this wonderful celebration to just one day, so here at What We're Drinking, we're pivoting to a new holiday called Mayo de Mayo, which is done speak for, we're going for it. And Mayo de Mayo is brought to you by our friends at Fresh Victor, a line of all-natural, additive-free cocktail mixers that brings the magic of master mixologist into your home. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced, there's no artificial anything. The mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste. Now, a classic margarita is often made with expensive high-proof triple sec as the sweetener. But by removing it and using fresh Victor instead, which is sweetened with organic agave nectar and organic cane sugar, you get a lower alcohol, lower calorie, less expensive, and easy to make fresh agave margarita. And because Fresh Victor has so many different flavors to choose from, like jalapeno and lime, cactus pear and pomegranate, strawberry and lemon, you can whip up all kinds of different margaritas and impress the hell out of your friends. Take advantage of the Fresh Victor Mayo de Mayo special exclusively for you, What We're Drinking listeners. FreshVictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code FVDAN20 to get 20% off your order. Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market, and that's Fresh Victor. Now, say what you will about the classlessness of what I just said, but, it's a buzz-at-any-cost mentality, but it's how a lot of people drink in the real world. And this is one of those uncomfortable facts usually conveniently overlooked by people in my trade. We booze podcasters and journalists like to tell ourselves that we're arbiters of some kind of high-minded gourmet sensibility because we explore and elucidate, say, the subtle distinction between strains of yeast used in malt fermentation or the sophisticated chemistry of how to infuse flavors into recipes. But the truth is, the only reason we write about the good stuff is because rich people like to get fucked up on the good stuff, and they need someone to tell them about it. Most people, however, will settle for just getting fucked up. And the place I learned the most about people just wanting to get fucked up was P&J's, the Philly joint my dad used to take me to when I was 7. I had plenty of time to learn because while technically my old man and I went there together, we didn't get much in the way of quality time. At least not once we got inside. You see, booze was always hanging out there, and Dad had been friends with booze a lot longer than he'd known me. So they'd talk for a while, privately, and I never knew what kind of mood he'd be in afterwards. Best to steer clear, just in case. Then after a little while, booze would usually meet some chicks and introduce them to Dad, and they'd all start talking. I sure as shit knew not to interrupt them. It sounds bad, but looking back on it now, I can't honestly blame him for all this. Dad was young and single and had an alcohol problem. What else was a guy like that expected to do in a bar except drink and hit on women? The geniuses among you might point out that he might have started by not taking his kid to the bar every day, but I honestly think it didn't occur to him not to. Anyway, I don't believe I suffered much as a result of his actions. If anything, his questionable behavior taught me to be independent and gave me some of the best pickup moves in my repertoire. Plus, him being preoccupied with Jack Daniels and Jane Doe simply meant I got to spend more time with Tall Paul. Tall Paul was the P in P&J's, the owner, head bartender, and karmic standard bearer of the establishment. He was 6'7", 250-pound behemoth known for his kind, humorous nature and large sledgehammer-like fists. He was a teddy bear most of the time, but woe betide troublemakers who attempted to make their trouble in his joint. Because if tempers flared and reconciliation failed, Tall Paul could kick the living shit out of anyone this side of Superman. To me, though, he was a gentle and benevolent giant who always made sure my glass was filled with Coke and that I never ran out of change for the pinball machine. He even gave me my very own very tall stool so I could see over the tops of the pool and shuffleboard tables. Kept it safely stored behind the giant barrel of pretzel mix next to the men's bathroom. I used to live on that pretzel mix. Till the day I witnessed a grubby old degenerate exit the bathroom without bothering to wash his hands after taking a shit, and then plunge his grubby shit digits into my beloved barrel. From that moment on, P&J's, I subsisted wholly on bags of pork rinds and munchos. Remember munchos? Oh, munchos. So good.
Introducing munchos from Frito-Lay. It's the all-new potato snack. Not a potato chip, a potato crisp.
Munchos?
You see, there's more to a muncho. They're thicker than potato chips, so they're crisper with more potato flavor.
Munchos!
I wish you'd try to control yourself.
Munchos!
What I remember most about Tall Paul, and the thing for which I am most indebted to him, is that he introduced me to a bar's most mysterious and magical space. The bar itself, behind the stick, the holiest of holies. There he laid the foundation for much of what would come to matter most to me later in life, and indeed for the show you're listening to right now. It wasn't playtime back there, mind you. Tall Paul wouldn't stand for anyone playing grab-ass behind his bar. It was a place where serious work got done, and he taught me how to do it, too. Showed me how to make screwdrivers, Bloody Marys, rusty nails, actual drinks that were served to actual people who tipped me actual currency. Usually only a dime, but hey, back then that was 2 credits on the pinball machine. It was my first summer internship, and it was beyond kick-ass. So what that my dad was too busy getting lit or trying to get laid to pay attention to me? I was the only 7-year-old in the entire neighborhood who knew how to clear beer lines and change a keg, or what the letters of a soda gun stood for, or that a plastic shot cup turned upside down in front of a customer at the bar meant Tall Paul was buying his next round. Other kids my age were planted in front of TVs watching Tom and Jerry reruns, while I was slinging gin and learning invaluable lessons about commerce, toxicology, and the oeuvres of Led Zeppelin, Rod Stewart, and Thin Lizzy. But I think the most important things I learned in P&J's had to do with self-discipline and personal responsibility, something that some might say is sorely lacking in the youth these days. Some of this came from watching the way people acted in there and what happened to them when they abdicated the above. But much of what I surmised about how you should act in a bar came courtesy of a weathered set of handwritten rules tacked to the wall right next to a framed photo of John F. Kennedy. I could still recite them verbatim. Ready? P&J's Rules of Behavior. There was a little note there that said the rules are non-negotiable unless your idea of a negotiation is getting knocked upside the head, in which case feel free to consult the management. All right, so number one, P&J's Rules of Behavior. If you can't afford to tip, you can't afford to be here. Number two, your bartender is not afraid to stomp you into tomorrow. As a reminder, he is armed and sober. Soberer than you, anyway. Three, if we see you arguing with inanimate objects, you're cut off. Four, men, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Five, women, no shoes, no shirt, free drinks. Granted, this was, you know, a long time ago. Don't kill the messenger, all right? Six, pricing for fielding calls from wives. Just left, $1. Not here, $2. Haven't seen him all day, $5. Again, it was a different time. These social mores had yet to evolve to where they needed to be. Number seven, if you're drinking to forget, please pay in advance. Eight, no swearing unless you're swearing to buy the next goddamn round. Number nine, P&J's does not serve women. You need to bring your own. Do I need to remind you? Okay. 10. Don't put any shit in the toilet besides shit. Number 11. If you reach behind the bar, be prepared to lose an arm. Number 12. P&J's closes at 2 a.m. sharp every day, unless we close early or stay open late. 13. No dogs on the bar. And finally, number 14. We reserve the right to refuse service to Dallas Cowboys fans. Sadly, the visits to P&J's with my dad abruptly ended after my mother, she had some issues, let's just say that. Well-meaning relatives had told me she'd gone to a farm to get some rest for a few months, if that means anything. Anyway, when she learned that my dad had been taking me to a bar most days, she seemed to recover her energy suddenly. I didn't see my dad for a few years after that, but I did see booze. That guy still hung out at P&J's even though Dad didn't. I wandered by the bar pretty regularly for a few weeks after the summer ended. I never got up the nerve to go inside without my old man, though. I just waited out on the curb, watching people come and go, always hoping the door would swing open and Tall Paul would be standing there smiling with a roll of dimes in one hand and a glass of Coke in the other. "Come on in, little Dunn," he'd say. "Where the hell you been?" And that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate you joining me as always. Really, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I invite you to follow me on Instagram at The Imbiber. The podcast's handle is at @WWD_podcast. Post some videos and fun stuff up there. Look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, leave you with a little snippet of a scene from one of the greatest movies ever made. Team America. World Police.
I'm completely lost. I've hit rock bottom.
Easy, easy. Whoa, you gotta calm down there, Chuck.
I hurt people. I'm a dick.
Oh, being a dick ain't so bad. See, there's three kinds of people. Dicks, pussies, and assholes. Pussies think everyone can get along, and dicks just want to fuck all the time without thinking it through. But then you got your assholes, Chuck. And all the assholes want is to shit all over everything. So pussies may get mad at dicks once in a while because pussies get fucked by dicks. But dicks also fuck assholes, Chuck. And if they didn't fuck the assholes, you know what you'd get? You'd get your dick and your pussy all covered in shit.
All right, that does it. Get out of here, you drunk lowlife.